Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Grant Talick. And Grant first stumbled across my radar when I saw him walking from sunrise to sundown. I said to myself, man, I gotta have this guy on the podcast because someone who wants to walk all day, who promotes walking and thinks about walking as much as Grant does, that's someone I want to talk to. And this conversation did not disappoint. We went into walking. We went into Grant's background and entrepreneurship. Overall, this was a tremendous time, and I'm grateful for it. If you enjoyed this episode, let me know on Twitter, at HeyDannyMiranda, and please share it with someone you think will enjoy this episode as well. Maybe someone who enjoys walking. Maybe someone who you connect with and who you think would enjoy it. That would mean the world to me. That's all for me. Let's get right into this episode with Grant Talick.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Grant, my man, thank you for coming on this podcast. I've been looking at your work from afar for a while, and the reason why I wanted to have you on is because when you walked 50 miles in one day and documented it, I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. So let's start there. What gave you the idea to do that?
Yeah, it's kind of a long story, but kind of my whole mission
on
Twitter.
Thankfully.
We've got time, right? We've got like an hour and a half. So my mission on Twitter is to get remote workers like outside and help them build a daily habit of walking. It took me a long time to find that mission, I'll be honest, because at the beginning of COVID, what I noticed was a lot of my friends, they were transitioning to remote work, right? And with that is a complete upending of our daily routines, walking to the office, walking to public transit, driving to the office, whatever it may be. So what I realized is that a lot of us were just spending so much time behind the computer that it was really weighing on our health and wellness, right? So about a year and 3 months ago, I decided I'm going to try to make a statement and kind of try to reimagine my workday. And I needed to do this personally too, because I was struggling a little bit with remote work and being a little disconnected from people and myself and nature. So I decided from 9 to 5, the standard workday, you know, I would walk the whole day and I would promote my business. I would do business development. I would reach out to individuals, make calls, send voice messages on LinkedIn, create video content. Like I would try to make it productive while also staying active on my 2 feet. And then a year passed and I was like, wow, this is my 1 year anniversary of this event. It really went well. I ended up walking like 26 miles and I had never walked or ran that far in my life, actually. I was like, okay, I'm going to step it up a little bit and I'm going to do sunrise to sunset. That's my only goal. I'm going to walk from the time the sun comes up to the time the sun comes down. I'm going to document the process and I'm going to show people just how far you can go if you just take step after step after step. And 95,000 steps later, I walked like 52 miles. And it was really fun. It was really fun, man. I'll be honest. I saw so much around the Boston area. Like I saw where Paul Revere was captured by the British soldiers. I went to this awesome outdoor art museum on this walk. I walked with my girlfriend. I got some lunch. You know, I saw basically all of my surroundings. Like there's more to see, but it was a really fun experience. So,
you know, you said you walked 9 to 5 and that was very common for you to walk 9 to 5. I'm not sure if you still do that, but how many steps, if you're going to start walking at 9 and you're going to end walking at 5, how many steps do you take in that period?
Well, to be clear, I only did that once and like,
gotcha.
I walk a lot each day. Part of my routine, right? My goal is to walk before work, walk before I get to my computer. That's the main goal. I'm pretty sure, I think it's about 40,000 steps would probably be 9 to 5. It's going to vary depending on what your speed is and things of that nature, but about 40,000. But in the, so 95,000 steps was the sunrise to sunset. And that started at 5 a.m., ended at 8:30. So that's what, 7, 15 hours. So if you can do the math, but it's crazy to think of just doing one thing 95,000 times in a day. Like, that's like, that sounds mental to me, honestly, when I did it.
Yeah. So how do you feel like afterwards? Was it what you expected, or take us through that?
I felt very fulfilled. I was glad that I did it, but my body was definitely very achy. I'm pretty active. I bike a ton. I play a ton of disc golf. I run, I walk. So, you know, I'm pretty good shape, and I didn't really start feeling it on the walk, I'd say, until like mile 37 was where I started to feel, like soreness and just fatigue. And then the last 13 miles, or I guess 15 miles, were pretty tough. And especially the last like 3 or 4 when you're about to be done. But the crazy thing is that the next day I woke up and I felt pretty great, honestly. And that's, wow, one of the cool things about walking is it's a low impact activity. You know, it's really kind of what our bodies are made to do. So it doesn't take as much of a toll on your body as you would think. I wouldn't recommend you going out right away and walking 52 miles, but you might be able to push your limits. Maybe you've never done a half marathon in your life before and you're not ready to train running or whatever it may be. Go walk it. I bet you could do it. Just try it. Just go walk 13 miles. And then who knows, the next week you do 26, the next week you do 50, like you can build up to it. So I honestly surprised myself by getting to 50. And really my whole goal was just, I didn't know how far I was going to go. All I was committed to was walking from sunrise to sunset and taking one step at a time. So that's all you can do.
You know, your name on Twitter is Grant is Walking to Inspire. Where did that come from?
Well, again, you know, my name is Grant Talek, and that's my handle on Twitter. But the title, I'm going to change it kind of frequently now because I want to try to mix it up. One of my friends, Craig Burgess on Twitter, I don't know if you know him, does this really well. Yeah, Craig's wild. He's always mixing up his Twitter name just to kind of keep it fresh. So, but that's the purpose of my Twitter account. Grant is Walking to Inspire. I want to get other people on their feet, building a daily habit of walking. So if with my tweets, that can just be a little bit of a reminder to people that, hey, if you've got 30 minutes, like after that Zoom call, or you've got 30 minutes before work, whatever it may be, you know, take that time for yourself and get outside. That's what it's all about.
You know, it's really interesting because you said it took a long time to come to this conclusion that this was going to be your niche, but you didn't really start on Twitter that long ago in the grand scheme of things. You're fresh out of college, it seems like, from previous interviews and research. So it's cool because it might seem like a long time to you to discover that is your niche, but like in retrospect, a year, 2 years, whatever it may be, it's not that long, right?
You're right. In retrospect, it's not that long. It feels, you know, we're young and ambitious, right? And I actually just turned 25 on Monday. And I feel a little discouraged sometimes. I'm like, I thought I would be further. I thought I would have accomplished XYZ goals. And sometimes I feel very behind the curve. And then I take a step back. You know, maybe I'll go for a walk and I'll think about this topic. I'm like, come on, Grant, you're 25. Like, look at this stuff takes time. Your work, your advocacy, your business takes time to grow. And so I think, you know, us as ambitious young people can be a little bit impatient sometimes. But you got to take a step back and just be like, you know, give yourself a little pat on the back and just most importantly, keep going and keep taking one step at a time. Right. So I guess it has been fairly quick, in the grand scheme of things, but it feels slow at times.
Yeah. I really relate to that. Where did you think you would be at 25? Let's say when you were 15 or 20.
If I was 15, professional golfer. I grew up wanting to be a professional golfer. And my dad was like, wanted to train me to be really great. And by the time I was like 13, 14, I kind of really dwindled on that passion and just stopped practicing. And so growing up throughout my entire young life, I was like, that is what I'm going to do. I love the sport, but then come high school, my passions kind of just changed. And I was playing a ton of different sports at the time, like soccer, golf, loved playing pickup basketball with my friends, beach volleyball. Like I was very active. I loved that. I knew that I wanted to live an active life and stay outside. Honestly, when I was 15, I didn't really know what I was going to do. I knew I wanted to have freedom in my life and try to like create my own way. And that's why I think I gravitated towards entrepreneurship, where I ended up going to Babson College, which is a business school focused on entrepreneurship. And I knew that just learning that skill would help me, you know, maybe decide what it was I wanted to do to become free and be able to travel, have new experiences, have a good life. At the end of the day, I just want to be happy, man. Like that's my goal. I want other people to be happy. And I think most of the time you get so caught up in these in goals early on in life that you think if you get that, you will achieve this level of happiness. And then you get it and you realize that this wasn't what I wanted. So, you know, I've tried to stay open and honest with myself and just kind of learn as I go. I don't know, some other passions I had, architecture in high school, but you know, one thing that I thought and was like a motivating force growing up, maybe when I was 15, I was like, I'm going to be a millionaire at 22. I'm going to be a millionaire at 23. And then I realize now that money is like so much lower on my priority level than it ever has been. Like now all I need is enough. And what really matters most to me is just freedom and freedom of time. So that was kind of a surprise for me too. But yeah.
Where did that belief start from?
What belief?
The belief
trying to be rich?
No, the belief that becoming rich wasn't the end all be all, because a lot of people might not reach that realization until they're 45 or 55 or 65, but you've managed to come to that conclusion at 25. So how did you come to that conclusion?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think what it was is that, I mean, growing up, I was very fortunate, but we had to be humble and cognizant of finances. It was always very frugal. My friends in high school knew me as being very cheap. So money was always something that there wasn't an abundance of. Like it was something that you had to be cautious with and you had to really pick and choose. One of the things I noticed in college, I went to school with a lot of very wealthy people and experienced a lot of like grotesque wealth actually. But what I realized is that there wasn't that big of a difference in our fulfillment levels in what we did. Maybe like I was spending my time the way I wanted to. I was getting outside. I was going on some skiing trips with my friends, biking, running, walking. Like I was able to achieve a certain level of happiness and fulfillment despite maybe the income differences in, you know, our families or just in wealth. Right. So, and then also just in my experiences in like, if I think of the experiences in my life that I've been most fulfilled and just felt like I'm on a mountaintop and felt like I just feel great. And I feel like life is like just invigorating is actually, yeah, when I'm on a mountaintop, when I'm hiking, when I'm backpacking. And when you're hiking or backpacking, you have everything that you need to survive right on your back right there. You've got your water filter, you've got your camping stove, and it's so freeing. It's and what I realize is that like that's usually when I feel at my best, and it doesn't require any wealth to be out there. What you need is the time to be able to do it, and you just need some food. You need some sustenance right while you're on the trail and the right mindset to be able to enjoy it. So through experiencing and seeing that some people in my life that do have a lot of money, it didn't really do anything for them. Or maybe they weren't using it properly. And that for me, the best experiences I've had really didn't require any money. You know, they were the experiences like I had walking from sunrise to sunset, right? No amount of money can purchase that. Like that's something that you just have to get outside and go do. And now we're talking about it and having fun in retrospect. So
was that difficult for you in college? When you felt like there was a difference in income level between you and the people you were going to school with, was that a difficult adjustment? How did you get over that? And like, what was the thought process initially? And how did that change as you stayed in college?
Yeah, I noticed that like some other people maybe what they did have the opportunity to do with the money that maybe I didn't have access to was that they could travel a ton, like every weekend, have really fun experiences that were like either maybe outside the country, in faraway places, right? To that, I was a little bit maybe jealous of. I was like, this would be nice to have. This is something I would like to have. But at the end of the day, I just tried to make the best of it. I had really good friends that if we were in our dorm rooms in our triple and we could have so much fun together, just, you know, going on fun adventures, like hanging out and just being around good people. So, and I knew too in college that like maybe right now I don't have the access to that wealth, but it's something that I could go get. It's something that if I really, really wanted to and dedicate myself to, that I could go get it. So it's not like it was something, you know, they have and I'll never have. And I didn't feel remorseful for that. It was that, it's just that they live a different life. You know what? They had struggles as kids too. They are so different maybe from mine or my neighbors. But, you know, just learn from that. And if that's something I really want to pursue, I could get it, right?
Where does that self-belief come from?
That the self-belief that I can become wealthy. Where is that? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're asking? Mm-hmm. I think that I'm passionate about, I really like to keep my hands busy. I like to work. I like to have a craft and focus on whether it's practicing, whether doing something. Like, I think that I just enjoy the process of learning new things. But honestly, to me now, like, it's kind of a hard question to answer because wealth really isn't as much of my focus. It's really much more about freedom and freedom of time and having enough money. So wealth for me is way more about time now than anything. So I feel like I have, and the reason why I think I can accomplish that is because I understand that for me, like, what I try to do on a daily basis is work towards that, is work towards having more freedom of time. So just, I guess, learning that at an early age is going to help with that. So it's a hard question to answer, though, I'll be honest. I'd like to think that I have something to bring to the world, too, some value that can help others and inspire others. I guess that's part of it as well.
You said earlier that you felt like you wanted freedom at some point when you were growing up and knew that you could achieve that. So, like, why did you have this idea of freedom and how was that planted in your head?
My family is kind of all dispersed around the United States. Like, my family, my dad's side grew up in Colorado, my mom grew up in Utah, and I was lucky enough to be able to visit those places while I was young. And being from Florida, to go to Colorado and experience the mountains and just have that experience was so amazing. I was like, I want to do this more often. You know, I want to travel and see different places and see different things. So, you know, having some early childhood like travel experiences was really fun and inspired me to want to do it more, I would say. As far as freedom in general, you know, I'm someone who likes to kind of beat my own drum. And like when I was in school growing up, like I didn't need my parents to tell me to go do my homework. Like I kind of just did it. You know, I was self-accountable. And for me, like freedom is a big part of freedom is just being responsible for yourself and having self-accountability and me being able to make your own plan, being able to go where you want, when you want, and have responsibility for yourself. So I think that might be a little unique to me, in the sense that I want to have full agency, whereas some people may need that like coaching a little bit more or want to have the kind of the tried and true path laid out in front of them. I'm willing to be a little more open, I guess, for the ride and, see see where life takes me. But I think that's a big part of it. So the early childhood experiences traveling with my family was awesome. And then also just kind of being self-accountable and wanting to kind of weave my own path through life.
How much of the business that you start at 14 with fishing, something to do with fishing, how much did that play a role in the idea that you could achieve freedom later on if you actually devoted yourself to a business or to an idea on the internet?
Yeah, so I loved fishing growing up. Absolutely loved it. In Florida, like, such a great place to do it. And my family would just like drop me off at the beach sometimes with friends, and we would just fish all day. And when I was 14, I knew I wanted to start a business. My grandpa had a woodworking business his whole life that he ran until he was like 93 years old. And up until like he was so old that he would go into the office and just take naps. And he was like, yeah, I'm going in the office today. And I really appreciated his like passion for his work. And entrepreneurship really just pulled me that way because of my interest and maybe some inspiration from him. So I was like, okay, what's a business I can start that I know about that would be something that I can use? So my brother and I, we got some bucktail jig tying gear, and basically just a hook with a weight on it, and you use the bucktail from like a deer to add a little their feather or their fur to it, and it gives a little action, makes it look like a fish. So I made some, not really knowing what would happen, seeing if they'd even work. I brought them out one night fishing at night. They also, I added my own personal touch. They'd glow in the dark fur on it. Would hold it up to my headlamp. You know, one night my brother and I went out there and we killed it. We caught like 12 snook. I hooked up with my first tarpon and lost it. I've still never caught a tarpon to that date. And that was such a validating point in my life. And thanks for asking the question, because I'm looking back, like, I can remember vividly where we were on that boat, what the weather was like, which was pretty ominous and cloudy and scary, which is why the fish, I think, were biting. But those lures that I made with my hands, they worked. Like, we caught fish with them. And, you know, that wasn't something I went to Bass Pro Shops and bought. Like, I made it. And that was very validating. And then I was like, hey, why not try selling this and turning it into a business? So that's when I created my first website. Learned how to do it on YouTube. I think I used Weebly as the editor and just made a simple landing page, started marketing the business on like Florida fishing forums. And that was when forums were big. Like, you'd go to forums, were huge, and they were so fun. Now it's like Facebook groups and Twitter and forums are kind of an afterthought, but forums still have great SEO, by the way. You can search something, and for some reason, you always come back to these weird old forums. But that's how I was marketing it. And I had like a few orders. One that was like a $100 order. Wow. And at 14, that was like amazing. I was like, wow, okay, people actually want my stuff. So not only do the fish want it, but people want it. And I think I ran that business for like a year and a half. I got kind of a little bit of criticism from some of my classmates in high school. For it, like, I felt like I was getting bullied a little bit for it. And maybe looking back, I was being a little hard on myself, and I was a little embarrassed to just like broadcast the fact that I had this business and that I wanted to grow it. But that was very validating for me. Yeah. Making something that works and then making something that other people could use was huge. And all those skills that I learned, through that experience kind of compounded to today, and I use on a daily basis too. So.
What was that feeling like of like, oh wow, this random person placed a $100 order, or I just got this sale from this person I don't even know? Was that just like an aha moment for you, or was it later down the line that you really started to understand the power of the internet?
I wouldn't call it an aha moment. At the time, I was surprised. I was like, this person would pay me for these lures? Like, I made them in my garage. Like, this is amazing.
So wild.
And I put so much, you know, time and effort into them. So I would say, yeah, it definitely broke the ice, like, and made me realize that it's something that I could do. And I've never had a doubt in my mind that I could replicate that with other businesses in the future too. So, oh, hi, Ben. That's my friend. So, and actually Ben was one of my business partners in college. So that's kind of, it's kind of meta. But the biggest thing in that first order was I realized that, yes, I could sell something online. And now I've, again, never had a doubt in my mind that I could sell anything online, whether it's consulting services, products. Like, it's hard. It's not easy. Like, I was on those phishing forums posting all the time when I was, you know, on the toilet, on my phone, when I was at school sometimes. And you work so dang hard for that one $100 order. But it means so much more than that $100 because, again, it breaks the ice. It shows you can do it. So it was, that was a big moment looking back.
You know, Ben, for those just listening, Ben walked by in the background. But I'm curious, what was the next venture? Was it starting the storage business in college or was it something else?
No, this is the next venture was Sawyer Sunglasses. This was about 3 years after Drag Happy Fishing Lures.
I love these names too.
So naming businesses is really hard, honestly. I'll be honest. But at the end of the day, it's only like 1% of the equation. So if you're afraid to name your business, like, just give it a name and just run with it, because mm-hmm. the name, you create value with your brand, and the name is only one component. But the next business was Sawyer Sunglasses. And senior year, I had a class with my friend Austin. It was kind of like a research class, so we weren't doing a ton of work throughout the days, which meant we were brainstorming a ton, him and I. We were always talking about business ideas. Hey, I have this idea. Like, we were always talking about unicorn ideas, right? So, like, this is when a lot of the social media platforms were really, like, hitting their heyday, or at least really on the up and coming. And you had this, like, aspiration to maybe be like Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, and create a Facebook-like type platform or product. So a lot of the ideas we were talking about were so revolutionary that it was like, how are we as 18-year-old kids, like, going to pursue that? You know, where are we going to go raise $5 million in funding? Like, is this idea even good enough? So long story short, we never even executed on any of those ideas throughout our senior year of high school. And then come that summer, you know, that was our summer between high school and going to college. And we were like, all right, we actually have free time now. We should do something. We should actually start a business. It doesn't matter really what it is. We just have to launch a business. And what we thought would be really cool is if we could sell something that we would see other people use, like maybe in our surrounding town. So Naples, Florida, Southwest Florida, sunny Southwest Florida. You need sunglasses. You need good shades. Otherwise, you're going to burn your eyes. And you need some style. So we went on Alibaba, searched through the whole product listing, and we found this really cool supplier that had bamboo sunglasses. And we ordered samples, whipped up a logo, got samples. We're like, let's sell this. Let's start a business around this and see where we can take it. And so that first order of the first supply order was like $150 to $200. And it was like 8 pairs of sunglasses. We got them back. We're like, all right, these are pretty solid, like actually pretty high quality. Let's take product photography, which Austin did, my business partner at the time. And we recorded a video together. We launched a Kickstarter campaign. And we're like, let's just see how much money we can raise in pre-orders on Kickstarter. And we raised $6,000 in a month. And we were like, wow, again, another source of validation that, like, people put money towards this. This is something that could really turn into a business. And then after that campaign, you know, we had built good momentum as, like, high school seniors. $6,000 felt like a ton of money. And honestly, for your first month in business, $6,000 any business is like pretty solid. Like, it's not easy to ramp up fast. But the mistake we made is that with that money, we almost spent it like all towards inventory because we wanted to get lower costs. And what we didn't realize was how hard it would be to market that business and continue sales afterwards online after Kickstarter. That we just put way too much money towards inventory, and we could have put more resources towards like social media marketing and saving that money putting it towards better use. So I'll tell you, we had a really cool marketing campaign for that business. So, and it's similar to my walking advocacy that I do now. It was called the Sunset Challenge. So if you bought a pair of our sunglasses, which were like $45 to $75, if you went to the beach every single night, it actually didn't have to be the beach. You just went anywhere. It could be your front porch and watched the sunset, took a photo of the sunset, and then tagged us with like Sawyer Sunset Challenge. If you do that 7 days straight and hopefully build a habit of watching the sunset, like nature's greatest show, nature's fireworks, then we would refund your entire order. And
so smart. It
went pretty well. We ended up refunding a lot of orders too, so you got to remember that. But it was great for awareness. And looking back, my favorite part about it was that it actually got people practicing a behavior that I think can really make your lives better. So yeah, that was that business. One thing leads to the next, you know.
Was that the Sawyer Sunset Challenge? Was that before you raised the 6,000? After you raised the 6,000?
That was after.
How did you raise the 6,000 to begin with?
It was directly through Kickstarter. So if you don't know what Kickstarter is, it is a crowdfunding platform. People have a business idea, maybe for a product. They may not have the inventory or the financing to purchase the inventory or develop it. So you post your project on Kickstarter and you try to get people to back you and, you know, back you with $20, $30, $100, $5,000 rewards that they basically back you with that money. And then you get that money to put towards the product, purchase inventory, do R&D, and then when it's ready, you ship it to your backers and you give them that product or you send them that, you know, DVD file of the movie you created, whatever it could be. But the way we really promoted that was organically through the Kickstarter platform. Like at the time, I think Kickstarter was really hot and we posted the video, which was pretty well done. You know, we were young entrepreneurs. I think we had a good story. We had good graphics. And honestly, the Kickstarter algorithm kind of just took off. Like we weren't doing a ton of social media marketing with it. We promoted it to like friends and family. But the thing is, only 5% of the donations or the backing came from family. So like this was random people in all over the world too. So I don't think you could do that on Kickstarter anymore and get insane organic exposure unless you got either really lucky or you had the perfect product and it just hit right. I think we were kind of in a nice time too. This was about seven years ago, I guess. So a lot has changed in 7 years.
Okay, so let's say, I love playing this game here. Let's say you're creating Sawyer sunglasses today. What would you do differently starting off? Let's say you haven't even raised the 6,000.
Well, the first thing is I would, again, try to buy as little inventory as possible if I have money to work with. Like try to focus on selling before you invest in inventory. So that was a big mistake that we made. And then another thing is just being fully committed to the idea. You know, when things get tough, like, you know, we went to college, we went to separate schools. We got a little distracted maybe, right? And we also weren't together anymore, so it kind of made collaboration a little bit harder. And I think that at times it was easy to blame, hey, maybe this product isn't good enough, or maybe apparel just isn't for us, or maybe this industry isn't for us. Like sometimes it's just a matter of committing to it and saying, hey, we're going to make this business work. That is a big portion of being successful in any business. Thinking that you're going to make it big in the first year, and then by the end of the first year you've only made so much progress and you say, this just isn't it. You know, it sometimes takes 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 7 years to 10, right? So you have to be committed to the long run. But then also another thing is that I wish I would have focused on building an audience before I built a product, right? So with Sawyer sunglasses, like we built up like 6,000 or 7,000 followers on Instagram. They were mostly like 17 to 22 year old, you know, young people interested in outdoors, interested in travel. But then when we, you know, decided to not do that business anymore, we had that entire audience of people that we kind of just like left and, you know, stopped marketing to them. But what we thought maybe at the time was that like the business was in the product, but really like the business was more so in the attention that you had from your audience. And if you wanted to sell a different product to them or a different service, like, you could totally do that. So now what I wish I would have done at the time is focus more on who do I want to market to, who do I want to sell to, and then focusing on that and then realizing that, hey, you can sell any product to them in the future. Arvid Kaul, do you know Arvid?
I've heard of him before.
So I see him, his name pop up on Twitter sometimes. He's a big preacher. Oh, yeah. Big on Twitter. Big preacher of this idea of audience first and the idea that you should focus on who your market is and who you want your audience to be, who you care about more so than the product you're selling. So I'd say that's the biggest thing, is just focusing on long-term audience building and not be so worried to maybe swap out your product, try something new, but really just hone in and stay dedicated to that audience in the long term.
Yeah, I like that. So, you know, something common I see in you is the Sawyer Sunset Challenge and the daily walking is like, you're really good at creating ideas that stick in people's minds. What is your thought process when creating a marketing idea?
Yeah. Stickiness is a really important part. I mean, the biggest thing with, I'd say, like, the top of my marketing philosophy is just that it needs to help someone, right? It needs to actually make their day better, and it needs to maybe teach them something. But with walking specifically, what I know is that it's something that compounds over time, and what's most important is the habit. So with anything marketing related, if you can think about the way people have daily routines and are habitualized, then you can kind of unlock another level. So for instance, Panera Bread right now has this coffee subscription, which is $9 a month. You get unlimited coffee. And actually just so you know, they have 3 months free on it. So you get 3 months of free unlimited coffee at Panera, which is way too much coffee. You need to simmer down, honestly. It's something I'm trying to cut back on a little bit. But they're not trying to make money off that subscription. They'll probably lose money, right? But what they want is they want you to get in the door, because then you'll potentially purchase other food and other drinks, right? And you'll gain loyalty for them and with them. So if you can think about, how do you kind of become part of your audience's daily life, then you really kind of unlock another level. And again, it's not about that sole product or that sole marketing campaign. It's about getting them to continuously think about you. And one of the things that I've noticed with my walking advocacy on Twitter is that I get a lot of people reading something. I tweet about walking pretty much every day. Like, that's, if you can come to my profile, you know what you can expect. You're going to hear things about walking and trying to build a daily habit of walking and the benefits of it. So now I have friends that say, oh, I saw this article about walking. They're like, I thought of you, and they'll send it to me. Or like you, Danny, you do this all the time. You'll tag me in posts that people, you know, about walking, right? And it's like, I think Dave Gerhardt from Privy posted about, you know, I think most things can be solved with a long walk. That was his tweet the other day. You tagged me in or something like that. So if you can kind of be in the back of people's mind with a specific topic, then you're really going to gain an edge. And I guess the theme with walking and with the sunset, with these marketing campaigns that I've done in the past, is that they're natural things that kind of we do on a daily basis. So I think if you can kind of tap into people's daily habits and think about the psychology behind why they would use a product, then that's going to really help your marketing campaigns. So, yeah.
This is why I think that people overthink content so much, and they say, oh, I have to post the perfect thing. But yeah, what if something you do can just become something that people know you for, and whenever they think about it, you're going to be linked to that thing or person? It could be as simple as like eating an apple. It could be as simple as liking the New York Jets, right? Like, I can't think of the New York Jets without thinking of Gary Vaynerchuk. How did he do that? He just talked about the Jets over and over and over again. He talked about the himself Jets. And everyone could do that about their own interests or passions. And that's such an edge because he owns that piece of real estate in my mind. You own the piece of real estate in my mind that has to do with walking. And it's mm-hmm. like, now if something walking related happens, I'm going to be thinking about you. One thing that I've struggled with this is like, I don't want to pigeon myself into a specific place because I'm like, I'm a human being with so many different interests and like, you know what I mean? So it's like, how do you get over that if you're talking directly to me?
So it is so hard, honestly. I'm the same way. It took me it felt like a long time to kind of come to this niche, right? Because I also care about disc golf. I care about biking. I care about like mountain biking, so many like urban infrastructure. I care about so many other things. You can still talk about those things with your content. Like you can still talk about a wide array of passions you have, but I think it's really important to have that at least core messaging and like core mm-hmm. niche that you're talking about. And then, okay, yes, on Friday or Saturday, you can talk about the other stuff too, but there's got to be something that people at least know you for and associate you for. And like you said, you own that piece of real estate in your head. They own that piece of real estate in your head to where you hear walking or you hear podcasting, they're going to think of Grant or Danny Miranda. So think of it like a T. Like there's this idea in like marketing called T-shaped expertise or T-shaped skill set, where if you really want to be influential, you want to have a broad base of knowledge, but then you really want to also have a deep, in one specific category, you want to have a really deep set of expertise where you know more about that than anyone else. But that doesn't mean you still need that broad expertise, and you need to be interesting too. So yeah, you don't have to stop talking about your passions and interests. You can bring those in, but you need to have that one core thing. And if you haven't found it yet, that's okay. You don't just decide one day that this is your niche and that's all it's going to be. Like for me, it happened more organically. It happened by getting feedback from people online. It came from me like just trying different things and trying to figure out what I enjoyed doing and what was kind of a common theme in my life. And one of the things that really helped me was that I decided, hey, walking is something that I know I can do until I'm 95 yep. or 195 years old. Like, yep. and I'm going to try to do it all day. So, you know what? Maybe why not make that something that I also help other people do? And it's something that I can do for a long, long time, right? So with the niche you pick, also be really aware that, hey, if you're going to pick a niche, you better be willing to do it for 10 years, 20 years, 30 mm-hmm. years, 40 years, 50 years, because that's when it really starts compounding and becoming powerful. So, you know, don't choose your niche, like choose it wisely, like, cause you've got to commit to it for the long run. Or else it just doesn't have as much power.
I agree. I also want to bring up a counterpoint of Gary Vaynerchuk, sure. who said, after 5 years of doing a daily wine show, I'm going to stop doing this daily wine show. And people are yeah. like, you're so crazy. What is wrong with you? This is going to take off. Like, this is already huge. What are you doing? You've built up all this equity and capital in being the wine guy. And he was like, you know what? That's cool. I'm going to talk about business now because I feel more yep. comfortable talking about business. So I think, you know, I'm with you that it should be a long-term idea, but it's also okay to change, right? Like, you could decide, sure. you know, like, I actually prefer talking about podcasting now because you've been doing it for 6 years rather than walking. It's like, go for it. You know, that's all part of the process of evolving and more of a reason why it's okay to pick something, because you can always change it if you've done your time with that specific thing and really tried to hone it to the best of your abilities.
Yeah. At the end of the day, he still did it for 5 years though. And that's a yeah. pretty long time, but Absolutely. You're right. You never should be afraid to just switch it up and try something new, because the cool thing is literally everything Gary learned with marketing his wine business and video content there, it applies to his media business too. Exactly. So it really is kind of one in the same, right? In like, I mentioned a regret of not focusing on audience first with Sawyer Sunglasses and kind of abandoning that audience or whatever. But every single thing that I learned in social media marketing in that business, I apply in my business today. So the skills are compounding. And if you want to switch up your niche, do it. But just realize that you really can make your message more powerful if you're committed and committed for the long run.
So as the marketing expert that you are, take me through the what you would recommend for me in terms of figuring out a niche.
Yeah, I mean, I'll ask you, like, who have you enjoyed interviewing the most, personally?
Like, if you had, like, three or four people there. People who are self-aware, who are emotionally intelligent, and who have spent time looking at themselves.
Gotcha. I think, are there, like, maybe three or four people that, maybe one person that sticks out? It's an example of that?
No. Honest, like, maybe if I looked at it and really looked at every person.
So that's fine. But yeah, you mentioned you really like interviewing people who are self-aware, who like maybe understand their past, have really dug deep. I think choosing that niche, you got to choose a niche that you enjoy, because if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to do it for a long time. You're not going to be able to stick to it. And also, as far as podcasting goes, like the most interesting conversations are going to be with people who are self-aware.
That's true.
And who are introspective and can dig deep. So I think that goes hand in hand and play as well. But I think do you enjoy podcasting? First of all, I bet you do. I'm going to guess you do.
Yes.
Enjoy the process.
Yes.
Like you enjoy podcasting. If you within that group of people, you can think about who you've like enjoyed the most and gotten the most like satisfaction out of interviewing. I think that's at least where you hone in on. And then you go from there.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
It's tough though, right? Because I also enjoy talking to people who are into NFTs and the conversation isn't anything to do with self-awareness. And I love putting those out there because I think in 10 years, it's going to be awesome to see what happens in that space and see how it develops. So it's tough for me thinking like this because I want to be everywhere.
I feel you, man. And you know what, like, well, as an example, like Joe Rogan has the widest breadth of things that he talks about. Anything and everything, kind of, mm-hmm. right? And it's interesting. He has really good guests. He kind of has an audience figured out, though, like where it's you know, probably like 20 to 35-year-old males who are interested in, you know, achievement, right? So, like, that his content is interesting to that audience. So, again, maybe, you know, you can talk about a wide breadth of expertise and knowledge to a specific set of people. And serve them that what matters to them. So you can kind of, maybe your niche is not having a niche, you know.
It's possible.
And kind of ironic and contrarian,
it's possible that it will just take longer for the podcast to develop because it won't be top of mind in any respect in any one area. And so Joe Rogan's built his audience over 20 years, first in comedy and then the podcast more broadly, but it's like that is a route you could take. Just understand that it might take longer. So
that's true. There's also a bigger opportunity there. Like if you're talking about wide breadth of things, mm-hmm. it's going to take longer to develop maybe, but you can speak to more people and, you know, create more influence with a niche audience. You could probably get there faster with a niche topic but the ceiling's a little lower. Again, maybe it doesn't matter that you have to have a massive ceiling. Maybe you care about a really specific topic. And you can just hone in there. So there are certainly pros and cons that you got to weigh yourself based on how big your goals are or who you really care about.
Absolutely. So I appreciate you taking all that time to identify myself. Let's get back into your own story and what your next business venture was after Sawyer Sunglasses.
Okay. So it's the next business venture. And then there's one after that I'm currently doing now, Authentic Marketing. And I've been working on that for the last 3 years, right? So the one before that was Get Boxed Up, Moving in Storage on the Babson College campus. And basically at Babson, there were a bunch of international students. And what would happen is for the summers, they would have mini fridges, they would have TVs, like they would have couches. And where are you going to put those things? You just throw them away? Do you bring them to a self-storage unit? No, those are really expensive, really inconvenient. So what we had was a pickup service where my business partner, Ben, that walked behind me earlier, we would go to your dorm room, pick up your items, and then we bring them to an offsite storage location and then return them back at the end of the summer. That's basically how the business works. So it was a really convenient storage option for international students and students that didn't live in the greater Boston, greater Massachusetts area that would drive home. And essentially the way we marketed it was we would set up shop like in the Reynolds Dining Center, and we would have the equipment and the boxes to give to people. And so this was probably the most important marketing piece for this business, was that it needed to be so simple and easy for them to store with us. That essentially was the market. If we could make it so easy for them to work with us, it was just seamless for them. So our priority was getting boxes in their hands. Like, we needed to get boxes in the hands of our storage customers. So we would do deliveries directly to their doorstep. And like, I was literally, I remember one time I had to drop them off across campus, and I didn't have a car on campus. So I like got my friend's skateboard and skateboarded across campus with boxes on my head to deliver them to, you know, whoever's dorm room. And that was our main marketing strategy, getting materials in their hands and having our website on those boxes so that they could really quickly, easily check out. And then we did a ton of Facebook groups, were really big at this point. All the classes at Babson had like Babson College class of 2019, 2018. And as students, we had an edge over the outside competitors who, you know, didn't have access to those Facebook groups. And we could post and say, hey, you know, we're Grant and Ben. We started this storage business. We make it really easy for you to get started with us, XYZ, right? So we leverage those Facebook groups, some guerrilla marketing on campus. And it was really fun. You know, had to learn a lot about logistics. It was the stupidest business for a college student to start, though, because I was playing golf at the time. My freshman year, everyone moves out during finals week. So, obviously. And during finals week, Ben and I were also taking finals. And we also had golf practice. So, I had to manage taking finals, moving, you know, 30 to 50 kids out. And that was so difficult to scale because we didn't have employees. It was just Ben and I. We were the ones picking up these mini fridges, running up and down the stairs to bring them to the box truck. And that logistically, I don't think we thought enough about that in the business we started, because that was tough. That was real tough. So fun, though.
At one point, you get acquired, right, by another company, a guy who's 4 years older than you. And he calls you up and he says,
yes. Yeah. So tell we didn't get acquired, but what happened was I was kind of ready to stop doing the business anyways. And Joe Zanka, who also has a podcast, the Get It Done podcast, called me up and said, hey, instead of us competing on campus together, why don't we partner up? And honestly, he recognized, like, I was pretty tired of running the logistics, the liability of it at that point. And He came to me as a competitor and was like, hey, let's collaborate. And I really respected that. We kicked off a relationship. And then the next year, basically, I kind of worked as like a contractor for them. So in a way, it kind of more got absorbed by them. And at the end of the day, like, our business was, we weren't able to sell it because we were the business. You know, yeah. We didn't have employees. We didn't have crazy systems. Like, we were the system. It was so dependent on us. So it didn't really have value to be sold. So, you know, we ended up working with Joe and doing move outs and doing like a profit share, which is fun. The cool thing here, though, is that fast forward to my current company, Authentic Marketing, and essentially we're a marketing agency. We started out as a very like offering a wide array of digital marketing services. But Joe Zanka, the guy who called me up as a competitor in storage businesses, they ended up becoming one of our first clients for the marketing agency. So again, one thing leads to the next. And here we are today. And Joe is still one of our clients 3 years later after we kicked things off with them. So should I talk about the transition from...
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, the summer storage business was, again, something that was kind of sunsetted. And I, come senior year, me and a very close friend, a roommate, Mitch, who's my business partner now, we knew if we're going to do full-time entrepreneurship after college, we had to have something running that was profitable and bringing in dollars that we could hopefully finance our lives after college with that. So we kind of had to do some introspection, figure out kind of, okay, what are we good at? How can we help? And as I mentioned with all these previous businesses I've started there, the one common tie was that they're really heavily focused on digital marketing, social media marketing, website design, graphic design. Like that's stuff that we all learned through those experiences. And Mitch kind of had a similar journey to me as well. He had started different businesses on his own, but he had learned a ton about digital marketing himself. So we knew that if we were going to do full-time entrepreneurship, we needed to bring in dollars and do it consistently month over month. So we went after the digital agency model, helping other businesses with their digital marketing, getting paid monthly, having, you know, high profit margins, because again, at first Mitch and I were doing most of the work. So most of the revenue we bring in also was able to pass through to our pockets and hopefully finance our lives. You know, again, after college, when, real world fully hits. And one of those first potential clients we went to was Joe Zanka from the storage company. And we said, hey, how can we help? We also went to some other, you know, friends, family, and Babson connections and had the same conversation with them. And we said, hey, how can we help? You know, how can we have your business grow? We didn't have a unique like service at the time. We didn't have a unique audience. We just leveraged our network and said, hey, how can we help? And that was kind of a fun part about how that business started, is because we were going after kind of any and opportunity we could go after, but really, you know, trying to fill a need in their business, right? So the difficulty there was that we kind of were sent on this rabbit chase of all these different types of projects and businesses, and whether it was web design, whether it was graphic design, social media management, like there was a wide array of things we were working on. And it just was not consistent. And it made it really hard to grow. It made it so that our website was like so unclear about what we did that if you went to our website, you wouldn't know how we could help. You, like, it was just too unclear, not enough transparency. And again, it took us a lot of kind of weaving through different niches and trying different services to hone in on content repurposing. And what we recognized was at the beginning of COVID, about a year and a half ago now, is that, you know, and ourselves actually especially, we were going to a ton of networking events, in-person networking events, and building relationships there, learning how to meet people and build nice relationships. Honestly, at first I hated networking, but then when I changed my mindset and started going into it and just wanting to meet people and build relationships and not worry about selling and not worry about pitching, it got so much better. It became something that I actually look forward to, not something that I dreaded. So the thing though is that with COVID, all that in-person networking stopped and our business has changed a lot, right? So podcasting grew a ton as a way to network, video content grew a ton as a way to build trust with your audience. And we had a lot of expertise in that area, in video content, video editing, and social media marketing. And what we recognized was that a lot of new podcasters and a lot of people that were creating live streams, they weren't leveraging that content well enough. You know, they'd post it online and then it would just disappear into the dark web, right? And just get lost. So what we recognized we could do is we could partner with them, take their content, distribute it, repurpose it into short micro videos, these 30 to 90 second videos that they could share across social media and get their message heard, right? So we basically came up with like very defined plans on our site, the very defined price, the very defined output. This is the X number of videos you get. And that was when it became clear what we needed to do to grow, like who we needed to work with and how we could serve them, was when we got more specific with our service offering and with our audience, podcasters, then our marketing got so much easier. And we kind of shifted from, oh, where's the next opportunity, to how are we going to build like a community kind of around us where we're just going to grow sustainably. And we get known for one specific thing, right? On Twitter, I'm pretty well known for walking. But on LinkedIn, if you go to my LinkedIn, I'm pretty well known for content repurposing and podcast repurposing. So again, that's kind of another way to have multiple niches, as well as you can have different kind of personas on other social medias, things that you really focus on more so. So that's where we are today. Authentic marketing helps podcasters, you know, get their message heard by repurposing their podcast. Something I already know you're crushing. You're doing well on YouTube, you've got those skills honed in. So yeah, that's where we're at today. And that business we've been running for about 3 years now. And again, going back to the commitment piece, like, this is the business we're committed to making work and in it for the long run. And you know, building our network out. So one of my favorite parts about this business is just the business owners we work with are so awesome. Like, they're so nice and they're just great people. It's fun to work them, fun to serve them. And we want to help them grow over time. So yeah.
It's awesome. And I think that you're hitting on a huge need. I thought to myself, if I was going to create an agency today, it would be around helping other podcasters shorten their clips, because that is the need that I personally have. And I put some shortened clips out, but in truth, I could be doing such a better job. I could be posting a third. Exactly. It's time consuming. And you want to focus on the process of recording the episodes if you're a podcaster. So I think you're hitting on a real, real need.
Hey, but I'll be honest, if you want to start that agency and be a competitor, I invite it. There's so much room in this space right
absolutely.
Now. And unmet that, you know, we would grow as competitors. I like to view my competitors as more collaborators than anything.
Just
so
say.
You should do it.
So what would the first steps for someone who wanted to create an agency like that take?
Yeah, I mean, again, you got to be a little introspective and see and think to yourself, what am I good at? What can I teach others? And maybe if you don't feel like you have that expertise yet, maybe you need to go learn it. Or maybe you need to dig a little bit deeper and ask your friends and say, hey, what do you think I'm really good at that could help other business owners? Because usually you do have something, and maybe you just haven't recognized it yet. But the people around you will. So you got to be a little introspective, figure out what you're good at. And you don't have to pick a niche right from the get-go. I would recommend against that, actually. I think at first you just need to get a few projects under your hand, under your belt rather, and go to the people that you already know that you think you could serve. And again, just ask them, you know, how can I help? Or offer the expertise that you already have, and maybe offer to do just one free example. Just one free example that you can have as a, you know, something to show other people. And then in the future, when you're selling, you can just offer that example and say, hey, this is what we can do for you. And this is how much it costs, right? I'd say be really wary early on of doing too much free work. It's a great way to try out different projects that you normally wouldn't get the opportunity to do. But if all of your projects are free, then it's not a business, unfortunately. So be introspective, ask the people around you, what do you think I'm better at than other people? And then I can help other business owners with, and then make your first dollar, you know, get a project under your belt and kind of break the ice. And then from there, you do need to, in the long run, I'd say in the first like 3 to 6 months of your business, try to hone in on that niche, that audience that you can serve best, and focus on creating an offering on your site where people, if someone were to go to your site, they know exactly the next steps to get started. They know how much they're going to pay. I think it's really important to get out of the hamster wheel of asking what their budget is. And then you get in this conversation where the business owner is like, hey, how much do you charge? And then you ask, oh, well, what's your budget? And then they're like, oh, well, you know, we don't have a budget. How much do you charge? Like, let's just be transparent and honest and have a set rate that you're confident with. You can always raise your prices. Don't feel bad about that. But developing that clear offering after a few months helps you just scale how many people you're reaching out to and making it clear and easy to understand how you can help. So three steps. Yeah. Ask others what you're good at. Get your first product under your belt and then try to develop that service offering and commit to it. But if it's not working, you can always pivot or add another service offering, but really in the long run, try to hone in on something that is just so clear and easy to understand that you maybe don't even need to have a bunch of Zoom calls teaching your customer, you know, what your service would be. Try to make it so clear and clear cut to understand that they just get it. Another thing, actually.
Yeah, go for it.
You don't need to try to convince people that they need your services. Like if you go to your uncle and they're just not sold on digital marketing, they want to do things their old way, just let it be. You don't need to sell to them, right? What you should do is go to the people that already need your services, right? You can do this on Twitter, and you'll go to Twitter and search, I need podcast repurposing, or I need a new website design. Who can help me? And just reach out to those people. What's great is they're asking for it. They're right there. They're ready to buy. And you don't need to convince them, right? You shouldn't have to sell to them. You should try to focus on business owners who understand your service already, who maybe just haven't met the right person to fill it. So if you're focused so much on pitching and selling, like try to act more like a hunter-gatherer, where you're going out, you're picking those berries, picking those strawberries, picking those apples that are kind of low-hanging fruit where people are already asking for the service, and then go from there.
I love that advice. And, you know, you're the second person that's come on this podcast that is running an agency like this. The first that I had on was Dylan and Henry, and they have such an interesting style. They got their start by basically creating clips for My First Million for free. And the people were like, wow, this is amazing. Sweet. I want to hire these people. Then they did it again for the All In podcast. And it's just like, they have this way, they call it squatter marketing, where you're basically squatting in that person's territory, in their mind of like, we're producing content for you and giving it a try. And it's worked out really well for them. And it's worth a try, I guess, for anyone listening.
No, that's a really good idea. Maybe.
Yeah.
I got to meet them too. What are their names again?
Dylan Jardin and Henry Belcaster.
Gotcha. I'll reach out to them as collaborators.
I'll connect you guys. They do incredible, incredible work. So I think you guys will get along well. But Grant, before I let you go, I would love to hear your advice to someone pursuing the highest version of themselves, whether that's mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever it may be. What is your advice to that person?
This one's really simple, and you can do it right now. But it's just go for a walk. You could have guessed this one, right? Like if you're feeling a little stressed, go for a walk. If you feel a little bit hazy about maybe what you should do this week, what your plans are for pushing yourself forward, go for a walk and think about it. You know, think deeply. If you've, you know, missed out on calling your parents, your mom, your dad, your grandparents, and you feel a little guilty about that, go for a walk. Give them a call. And I think if you can think of that as an anchor for your life and something that you do every day, it really can help. I know personally it's helped me a ton in just staying balanced. But you've got to be able to find that time away from your computer when you're so head down, to just be able to release those thoughts and those anxieties and, you know, just take a few steps. So it's kind of simple advice, but just get outside, go for a walk, and see what happens to you.
I love it, Grant. This has been so much fun and such a pleasure. Where can people find more from you if they made it this far? They want to let you know how great this episode was. Where should they contact you?
Yeah, so my name is Grant Talek, GRANTTALECK. You can follow me on Twitter, on LinkedIn, mainly on YouTube as well. And if you want to find out more about our done-for-you podcast repurposing services, you can go to authenticmarketing.com. And that's authentic with a Q, not a C. You can find out more information there, or you can reach out to me directly on social, and I'm pretty good at responding there. And any competitors out there that want to reach out and collaborate, please do that. Anyone that is interested in walking and health and wellness and trying to, you know, advocate in that realm, I'll really want to connect with, and maybe we'll go for a walk together. You never know.
I love it, Grant. Thank you for taking the time. Really appreciate you. And we'll link all those below.
Cool. Thanks, Danny.
Thank you, as always, for listening. If you enjoyed that episode with Grant, let me know on Twitter at HeyDannyMiranda. Also on Instagram these days at HeyDannyMiranda. And if you would like to see video versions of the podcast, this one and others, you can go to youtube.com/DannyMiranda. Thank you, as always, for listening. The fact that you made it to this point in the episode means the world to me. And if you'd like to, you can also share it with someone you think would enjoy it. That would mean the world to me, and I'd really, really appreciate it. I'm grateful for anyone who listens to even just 1 second of the podcast, but the fact that you made it to this point in the episode, it means the world to me. I just want to take a second to thank you for your time and attention. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day or night, and I will see you in the next one. Peace.